Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM.
Hello, I'm Ann Hillman. Last week, the U.S. Supreme Court issued a landmark decision and legalized same-sex marriage nationwide. But in the same week, the rainbow flag was burned outside of Identity, Anchorage's LGBT community center. In these fast-changing times, what challenges and successes are the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer communities facing here in Alaska? My guests today are Melissa Green, an activist and researcher who compiled surveys on discrimination against members of the LGBT community in both the 1980s and 2011. Also in the studios is Josh Hemsap, the regional development organizer for the Pride Foundation, which aims to expand opportunities for the LGBT community. Thank you both very much for being here.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Great to be here.
So let's start with the big news from last week, the steps that society is making towards equal rights. Supreme Court passed marriage equality. Is there much more to say about that here in Alaska?
Well, I just wanted to say that, in taking a look back over the report that I completed in 2012, that one of the things that really stood out for me was in 2012, of our 268 respondents, 207 of them, that was about 77% of them, said that their legal marital status was single, never been married. Yet at the same time, 58.2% of them said that they were in committed relationships. And what I wrote in the report at the time was committed relationships that were not recognized in law. And that is a fundamental change that now we can't say that anymore. And I really celebrate that.
It's been a huge week. The last week has just been a nonstop series of exciting victories coming from the Supreme Court. And it's a testament to the power of our movement and the work that a lot of members of our LGBT family have been working on for the last four plus decades since the first known same-sex couple walked into a Minneapolis courthouse 45 years ago. And at the same time, it's also really been exciting over the last 2 years. I think going into the 2013 Supreme Court decision, only a little less than 20 states had full same-sex marriage benefits. And going into the court decision on Friday, last Friday, it was close to 37. And so now it's all 50. And it's just a lot of progress in the last 2 years. It's been at a breakneck speed.
Do you guys see the same progress happening here in Alaska with attitudes towards same-sex marriage?
Well, so Balance Alaska, Balance AK, which is a coalition that we were a part of, Pride Foundation was a part of, did a survey last year. And while we weren't looking specifically at attitudes towards marriage equality, we were looking at attitudes towards non-discrimination protections in our state laws. And we found that a majority of Alaskans, 58%, supported adding sexual orientation, gender identity, and expression into our state laws. And so it's a kind of a moment to notice that while we've made a lot of progress, the biggest mistake we can make is to think that we have won and that we're done. We're not done.
So policy, there is no state law that guarantees protection for people based on sexual orientation. Why is that an important thing to have be in law?
Because people are still being discriminated against. In the survey that we completed in 2011 that I wrote the report on in 2012, we found that I think it was about 40% had actually experienced discrimination on the job beyond just simple verbal harassment, which is an endemic problem that all LGBT people experience at one time or another in their life. But job discrimination was also quite high. And I would say it was probably quite comparable to racial discrimination, sex discrimination, based on comparison of our study with studies that have been done in other localities where LGBT discrimination is illegal. One of the things that I found, there was a 2008 study from the Williams Institute that found that in laws, in states that have laws that prohibit LGB, that's lesbian, gay, bisexual, which is more widespread than prohibitions against transgender discrimination. But in those states, out of 10,000 employees of color, 6.5 complaints were made to per 10,000 people to human rights commissions. And for sex discrimination, 5.4 per 10,000 female employees. And for LGB employees, 4.7 per 10,000 LGB employees were making complaints of sexual orientation discrimination. So that's fairly comparable. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that all those cases were necessarily judged to be discriminatory. Those were complaints. But it shows that, yeah, we're getting substantial discrimination that we're experiencing.
And your study from here in Anchorage shows that's also the case locally.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Josh, you're working in rural areas of Alaska as well.
We do work in rural areas, although we're a regional community foundation, which means that we invest grants and scholarships across the Northwest in Alaska, Oregon, Idaho, Washington, and Montana. So, and there's only 15 staff people across those five states. So we're not working directly in a lot of those communities, but we are working in a lot of community partners in Juneau and Southeast, as well as in Fairbanks. And we have some ties to service providers in Bethel and have issued grants there as well. And it's kind of listening to Melissa talk about the rates of discrimination and complaints, it kind of highlights the idea that with a lot of complaint-based systems when it relates to discrimination, a lot of people don't feel safe reporting. And so there's a good chance that those numbers are just the tip of the iceberg in terms of the actual amount of discrimination that's going on against members of our community. So, and also thinking about the difference between rural and urban areas. Here in Anchorage, while the services that are available to members of our LGBTQ community maybe pale in comparison to other metropolitan areas like Seattle or San Francisco, which have more robust services available, Anchorage's service community for LGBT Alaskans is a lot more robust than, say, in Juneau, where you're isolated by ferry and plane and you're not on the road system, or any other place in Alaska like Nome or Bethel, where it's a plane trip to Alaska, to Anchorage, if mm-hmm. you want to visit the community center, if you have any health care needs that need to get taken care of by a competent service provider. Access to quality health care is a huge issue facing our community. And so until everyone is able to be who they are, where they are, Pride Foundation is going to continue to make these investments in eliminating disparities across rural and urban divides.
And so on the issue of healthcare, I mean, that's an issue faced by everybody, not just the LGBT community. Do you think being a member of the LGBT community, it poses, I guess I want to say, any additional risks being further from larger healthcare opportunities?
Without having the numbers in front of me, access to healthcare, and just speaking from personal experience, I would say that I'm less likely to take advantage of services, medical services, if I need them, because I'm not necessarily sure if I want to have that conversation with a new provider. I'm not sure. I left the state for a couple years for college and my first job out of college and then moved back. I didn't know where the competent healthcare providers were when I moved back. Mm-hmm. So I turned to service providers that I knew nationally, like Planned Parenthood. But even Planned Parenthood locally here in Anchorage doesn't provide like family medical care. So it's not a family practice, mm-hmm. unfortunately, like it is elsewhere in the United States. Because I just don't think that they have the client base to do that. And so where do you turn as a member of the LGBT community?
And one of the things that we found in the discrimination survey, which I've got to be specific that it was an Anchorage discrimination survey. We were just looking at respondents in Anchorage. but of the types of discrimination that we asked questions about, the highest rate of discrimination in public accommodations was in discrimination was in healthcare. That you know, and I don't have all the numbers right at the top of my head right now.
Fair enough.
It's 3 years ago that I did this, but that there was a substantial number of people, significant number of people who had been turned away for health care by health providers, particularly transgender respondents. So we can't always trust health care providers to actually even serve us.
Even if they're there. How do you begin that conversation? I mean, how do you find someone that you know is safe to go to?
For me, it's been word of mouth. I'm fortunate enough to be connected to other members of the LGBT community, but there are many members of our community that are a little bit more isolated, especially if they're older Alaskans. They might be even more isolated than other younger members of the community. And so how do you find, it's word of mouth at this point, there's not.
If I was new to Anchorage, first thing I'd do would probably be track down identity and get referrals. But what do I do if I'm in Bethel? What do I do if I'm in Barrow, you know?
It just highlights that disparity between rural and remote parts of our state, as well as, you know, the services that are available. And even the services here in Anchorage just don't cut it, especially for the most vulnerable members of our community, including transgender Alaskans. You know, where do you find a competent urologist? We don't know who the competent urologists are. We don't know who the competent reproductive health care providers are. And we don't even have, you know, a comprehensive training system for medical providers across the gamut.
When you say competent, you mean not just skilled in their trade, but also accepting.
Accepting, inclusive, culturally competent.
Culturally competent.
Willing to work with. I mean, just the willingness to work with patients, transgender patients, is, I mean, a huge barrier that a lot of members of our community face.
And that's particularly an area that transgender respondents to the survey talked about, was especially issues in being denied transition-related health care, which has a whole, you know, host of things that are unique to that experience of transition from, you know, the one's gender identity as assigned on one's birth certificate versus the gender that one actually is.
And another frequently mentioned vulnerable population within Alaska and nationwide are LGBT youth. You see, unfortunately, a lot of stories about suicides and bullying within school. Are LGBT youth here in Alaska also facing harder issues, more discrimination?
Unfortunately, we just don't have the numbers. There's a huge problem with data collection here in Alaska in terms of service providers and the child welfare system. We just don't know. They don't track based on sexual orientation, gender identity, and expression. So we don't know if they're accessing services. But at a national level, we know that 40% of homeless youth identify as LGBTQ compared to 7% of the general youth population. It's a huge disparity, and a lot of the reason for that huge disparity is because of parental and family rejection. So youth are kicked out of their homes, they have nowhere to go. Sometimes homelessness includes couch surfing. They're going from friend to friend to friend trying to find a safe, warm place to go. Sometimes they don't often find that. And then a lot of the service providers, mainstream service providers that they might need to access might not be culturally competent, depending on the belief system that of the organization that runs those agencies. They might not be willing to serve that particular youth, or they might try to reunite that youth with their family despite circumstances that youth has faced up to that point. There's a lot of complicated issues and challenges facing homeless youth, specifically homeless LGBTQ youth in our state and in our country.
I can tell you that we couldn't include youth under 18. We couldn't target youth under 18 mm-hmm. for a survey because there are, you know, laws and restrictions mm-hmm. about research with underage populations. And we didn't even try to broach that because it would have been quite difficult to accomplish. But there was information in our survey that sort of shed some light on that we did ask questions of our respondents about their experience in Anchorage of discrimination or harassment in educational environments. And, you know, it was specific to, we were specifically saying in Anchorage. Mm-hmm. So colleges, grade school, if you grew up in Anchorage, mm-hmm. whatever. So we had adult respondents, but we also did get a response that said that indicated that discrimination harassment of LGBT youth in schools appears to be quite high. And that's also including recent. We had a subset of our population, about 50 respondents, who had lived in Anchorage for less than five years or less. And we used their responses to judge recent discrimination. And even with them, even though, you know, they couldn't accumulate, they didn't have enough time in Anchorage to accumulate a lot of experiences of mm-hmm. discrimination, even in that population, there were fairly high rates of harassment and bullying and et cetera, including bullying sometimes by teachers, right. but also by peers, that people were reporting that they'd experienced in Anchorage schools.
And on that note, we actually have a video of Edie Bailey, who has been taking in foster kids for 30 years now, who are from the LGBT community. And she speaks a bit about how parents can react to their kids when they do come out. Let's watch the video.
My name is Edie Bailey, and my husband is Vincent Brown. We've been doing foster care since 1987, and the very first kid that we took was gay. Then as time passed, it just was the luck of the draw that I started getting gay kids. And then it was sort of on purpose that I started getting gay kids. And so I don't know how many we've had. It's hard to say, but probably a dozen.
In 2012, the summer, I was at Denali Family Services, and I had kind of blown out of there. And they called her and told her that I was available and she took me.
Mm-hmm. And what was it about Edie that stuck out to you?
I liked her, and she's just an adorable person.
With each kid, I learned something a little more. And I just realized what a struggle it was, and I realized how much they need to be accepted.
I was born and raised in Anchorage, Alaska, spent most of my childhood in foster care. I partially came out when I was 16, but I said, nope, I'm confused. And then when I was 18, people started suspecting it in treatment. They were like, you're gay, aren't you? I said, no, I'm not. And then when I got out of treatment, I was up in the middle of the night, and I was like, I can either live a lie or I can be my true self.
Like the kids that we get, we normally get them when they're 14 or 15, and they usually stay with us until they grow up. And so we are family. Most of the time, Vincent and I are the only heterosexual people in this house. So parents need to realize that this is, you know, if the kid suddenly had something else that was different about them, they wouldn't reject them for that. And it's just that there is such a stigma against homosexuality. We have passed gay marriage now, but there's still a lot more to do. I am the chair of the Equal Rights Commission, and we still do not have one of the protected groups is not LGBTQ.
There's no protections in the workforce. They can fire you if you're gay. You can be refused services too.
There's still, I think there's discrimination in school. Like we have a kid who was in school and he took his boyfriend to a school dance. And after that, he had some kids who were they tried to bully him. And even though Anchorage School District has zero tolerance for bullying, you can't catch all of it. And so I eventually took him out of the school he was in. And I am now homeschooling him because it was so unpleasant for him to be there. Well, I don't have as much advice for kids as I do for parents. That parents should accept the fact that a child does not choose to be gay, that they are born that way. And so they should not discriminate against their child. They should accept them.
I've heard from multiple people that she's really...
Edie rocks.
Edie rocks.
So she ended with this idea, this advice for parents and how to speak to your child. What about speaking to people in the broader community who don't necessarily understand what it means to be not so straight? What advice would either of you give?
I've said for a lot of years, and I still hold by this, that as important as church work that I did in 85, 89, 2011, 2012, that the most important thing that I have done to advance equality for LGBT people is to be myself. In my workplace, in wherever I am, I'm lucky enough that I am in a workplace 25 years I'm coming up on, that I'm completely accepted, and I'm just one of the people or whatever. And I think that that's done a lot to, we're just people. And there are other ways that people are different all the time. And I have never been able to understand why that is so threatening. So it's important, you know, I mean, I think as LGBT community, the more that we are able to be out as who we are and just live our lives can be a help. And I see non-LGBT people respond to that. I think that a lot of the changes that have come about over the last couple of decades have really been because non-LGBT people have gone, wow, they really are just people, you know. And I see... younger students, I work at the university, I see students say, wow, it's just a no-brainer. What's the problem with people who, you know, have that issue? Just accepting, meeting people as celebrating difference instead of being threatened by it.
So thinking about a lot of the recent strides that we've had over the last 20 years specifically, I think about listening to Melissa makes me think about Gallup's been tracking over the last several decades the number of people who know someone who identifies as LGBT. And in the early 80s, it was, you know, between 7% and 10%. And now it's, you know, close to 2/3 to 3/4 of the U.S. Population know someone who's LGBT. And similarly, you know, across generations and across time, the rate of support for marriage equality, for non-discrimination protections has also increased. And that has little to do with, you know, the change in generations. This is due to people across all generations getting to know someone in their community, being themselves in the workplace like Melissa is, and especially in workplaces that have safe protections for their employees. You know, Paris's story really highlighted the fact that it's a really sad irony that in the day and age that all 50 states, thanks to the Supreme Court, now have full marriage equality, a couple could get married on a Saturday or a Sunday, and then the following Monday be sharing pictures from their wedding ceremony with their coworkers or supervisor, and find themselves without a job and potentially other problems down the line. We've heard from members in our community that don't feel safe in their workplace, and people who have lost their jobs and homes and had to rebuild it over time, rebuild their careers over the last, you know, 10, 15 years. And we heard stories about that during Pride Week. And it's...
So even though attitudes are changing organically in a lot of ways, there still needs to be legal protections put in place?
Laws aren't keeping pace with the attitudes and beliefs and values that a broad majority of Alaskans and Americans hold. And so we need our laws to reflect those evolved attitudes, and we need those laws to protect everyone in their workplace. We need them to protect them in areas of housing discrimination. It's still legal to get evicted based on who you are. And then also in areas of public accommodations, like Melissa was talking about, in terms of discrimination from healthcare or discrimination in places of business. If you have an open sign on your business, it means that you're open for business for everyone.
Well, thank you both very much for being here. That was Josh Hemsath with the Pride Foundation and Mel Green, a local activist and researcher talking about LGBT issues in Alaska. Thanks for listening. If you missed any of the program, you can listen again at alaskapublic.org. Goodbye.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.